I'm Bill Littlefield. The NBA playoffs are entering their second week, which should give us plenty to talk about. During this week's Three Stories You Should Know, I'm joined by sports writer Eric Malinowski and ESPN's Mina Kimes. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks, Bill.
Hello.
Eric, we're going to start with you. You're a resident of the Bay Area, and from what I've seen in your Twitter feed starting Thursday night, I can say with utter confidence that you've been paying attention to a certain NBA matchup, right?
Yeah, just a little bit. Nervous times here, just a little bit. So, you know, the Golden State Warriors won a record 73 games this past regular season, and they were supposed to romp, I would say, through their first-round matchup at the Houston Rockets, but that's not exactly happening so far. The big reason for that is Stephen Curry, who won the scoring title this past season and is likely just days away from repeating as the league's MVP. He tweaked his ankle midway through Game 1. Now, that's the technical term the Warriors have used, tweaked.
Medical term.
It is, very technical. Now, they were able to sneak by in Game 2 at home without him, but Curry was out again in Game 3 on Thursday, and the Warriors lost in Houston. They didn't play well. They looked completely out of sorts. The fact is that even after the Game 3 loss, ESPN still gave the Warriors a 97% chance of winning the series. Really? 97%? Is that all?
Wow.
But I think there's going to be a lot of concern over Curry's health status going forward, and so I can't help but wonder, is Curry's injury in some macabre way actually maybe good for the NBA? I think it certainly makes all of the Warriors' games a lot more competitive. Does his absence in some ways actually make them a little bit more interesting?
Yeah, I mean, well, you never want to be team injury unless you're a, you know, monstrous fantasy player. But I think that it cuts to this kind of core question, which is whether sports fans care more about suspense and competition or just mastery and beauty. And ideally, you get both. But with the Warriors, it's definitely sort of lean towards the latter, right? So this does introduce, I think, an element of suspense that's been missing so far.
I don't think a player's injury makes things more interesting. Also, you hear players talk about wanting their opponents to be at full strength. They want to play against a team that's got everything going for them. That's how they demonstrate how good they can be.
A very depleted Cavaliers team lost to the Warriors in the finals last year. It was earlier this season that LeBron actually called the Warriors the healthiest team in the history of the NBA or something like
that. Yeah, that's exactly right. And part of that may be luck, and part of it may be they're better conditioned than other teams. I don't know. But I root for both teams to be at full strength all the time, no matter the sport.
That is certainly the consensus here in the Bay Area.
I'm not surprised. All right, Mina, you're up next, and I understand that you have been considering not only how teams are playing during this postseason, but also what they may soon be wearing when they next play.
Right. So a few days ago, the NBA announced that for the first time in league history, the owners approved very small 2.5 by 2.5 inch advertisements on jerseys starting in 2017. There's going to be a pilot program for a few seasons. Adam Silver used the phrase manifest destiny, I think, to describe this.
Not too dramatic.
Right, not to be dramatic at all. It's happened with Major League Soccer and the WNBA and, you know, the English Premier League, but it is a first for a big three U.S. sport. So a lot of fans are pretty upset about this, I think, from a moral or aesthetic perspective, and I kind of think that when you have, you know, branded replays and half-court shots and energy drinks, stadium lounges, the sellout ship has already sailed. But it's interesting from a business perspective for a couple of reasons. One, I think it tells us that there might be some concern with the league's owners about long-term television revenues, that they want to monetize this side of the game. And two, it's kind of this crossing the Rubicon moment. I mean, it's not going to stop here. I think the ads are going to get bigger. They're going to spread to other sports. And so I'm curious to see whether fans really care once it begins.
This should not be surprising probably in any way whatsoever. I mean, if there's any nickel or dime to be squeezed out of anything in sports, they're going to find a way to do it. I also feel like on some level, it's just like there are so many other like really important issues in sports that maybe truly deserve my own internal outrage, like domestic violence or PEDs or whoever FIFA is bribing this week. It's really just hard for me to get too worked up about all of it.
You know, I feel like this is one of those questions that's been teed up for me. It's like, you know, they call it a bunny. It's right. It's sitting there just waiting for me. First of all, Adam Silver should be ashamed of himself because Manifest Destiny was the justification basically for stealing a third of Mexico and beginning to call it Texas, California, Arizona, and New Mexico. I'm fine with the ads on the shirts as long as they all go the way of FC Barcelona and put UNICEF on their shirt and give $2 million to UNICEF instead of taking money from the corporation to put the sign on the shirt. I'm going to let you have the last word on this, Mina, because I've said all the socialist things that I have to say.
Yeah, I mean, I'm kind of with Eric in that I don't, you know, extremely object to it. And given the scope of some of the other issues facing these leagues, it's not a huge problem. But I do think it creates an interesting risk. You remember during the financial crisis when Man U had the AIG jerseys? I mean, who wanted, you know, and so, yeah, that's something the league needs to think about, which is they're not only introducing these businesses, but they're introducing all the problems that potentially come with them.
All right. My story is inspired by a list that comes out about this time every year. Time magazine's list of 100 most influential people includes a handful of athletes, as it generally does. Stephen Curry of the Warriors, of course, is on that list. MMA fighter Ronda Rousey, also Usain Bolt and Caitlyn Jenner on the list. I'm not sure what influential means in this context, and I've never been comfortable with the athlete as role model cliche. But I kind of like Tina Fey's justification for Ronda Rousey's inclusion. She said, "Could Ronda be the one to finally help us understand as females that we define the word feminism and it doesn't define us?" I thought that was a very sharp thing to make of Ronda Rousey's inclusion on that list. I wonder if either of you can think of athletes who should have been on the list and weren't, or maybe some who were on the list and shouldn't be. Mina, you take it first.
Yeah, well, thinking about athletes who have been influential or important over the last year, I think one that comes to mind for me would have been Cam Newton, not just for the amazing things he accomplished on the field, but sort of how he dominated the conversation for quite a long time and exposed this long simmering issue in sports, which is that the way we, by which I mean fans, announcers, analysts, draft scouts, writers, talk about black athletes is different from the way we talk about white athletes. So it's an important issue, and it's not going away because, well, he's not going away.
I thought overall it was a fine list. I mean, these things are always very arbitrary. You know, I think you could probably have come up with a list of 100 completely different people and would have been also pretty good. I think there were two that could have been included, and one of those was Bryce Harper, who not only ended up putting up one of the great, you know, offensive seasons that we've seen in baseball in maybe 60 or 70 years, maybe since the days of Ted Williams, but, you know, also ushered in this, I think, really interesting and sort of ongoing discussion about baseball and sort of sports in general and, you know, what place does youth and exuberance and fun have in the sport. And then the other athlete I would probably include is Breanna Stewart, who, you know, not quietly, you know, with a lot of attention, actually ended up, you know, wrapping up one of the really great careers in the history of American collegiate sports. And we think of UConn women's basketball as sort of, you know, the great dynasty in collegiate sports. And this was maybe the greatest, you know, UConn team of all time. And she was the leader of that team. So I could have definitely seen her being included with this collection of people.
My guests for Three Stories You Should Know have been sports writer Eric Malinowski and ESPN's Mina Kimes. Thanks to both of you.
Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.